I'm Ryan Sullivan, the co-founder of Buddy, and welcome to Buddy's Besties. Buddy is your streaming platform with all sorts of movies, TV series, and health series featuring pets in them, fetched just for you. You can start your free trial today at watchbuddy.com. Now, one of the movies we have streaming on Buddy that I really love is called Heart Prints in the Snow. It's a heartfelt documentary about dog sledding. And today, right here on Buddy's Besties, we're going to be talking to the director and the man behind Heart Prints in the Snow, Robert Michael. Robert, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm so happy to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Great. And we're happy to have you here. Okay. So tell me about your personal background, you know, what you do now, all those kind of fun things.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Flint, Michigan. Grew up a dog sledder, which is what initially inspired the film. Now living in California, I work as a film TV director, but I also work with an animal nutrition. I work for Nutrisource Pet Foods as well. They're really big in the Midwest, but I'm able to kind of combine my passion of animals with my passion of acting and filmmaking. So it's a win-win.
Great. Excellent. Okay. So where did the idea come from to do this? So you grew up, you did it. You did, your whole family did it. And we'll get into that in a little bit, right? Dog sling. But where does the actual idea come from that, man, I need to make this into a documentary, into a movie?
So I've always had the idea. When I first started making films, oh man, what, 2018, 2019, I knew I wanted to do something as far as dog sledding because it was such a huge chapter of our life. I just wasn't quite sure which route I was going to go. And me and my friend, we went to go see Call of the Wild with Harrison Ford. And something clicked. I'm like, I'm feeling emotionally attached to this story. And it reminded me of my own dogs growing up. And I'm like, maybe I need to talk about that. Talk about me growing up and my own dogs and my own connection, because you can see a lot of different films about dog sledding, you know, more of the dramatizations. But as far as that bond element or how it feels like being a team player with your dogs, you don't see a lot of movies about that. It's always about what the sport is or it's some drama recreation. So I sat down after watching that movie, and within a month, I had the script all laid out. I had already contacted people back home in Michigan who are still actively involved in the sport, and really hit the ground running, filmed it within a couple months, and then we were done. So,
wow. Excellent.
Watching the movie and some just, it was a trigger for me.
Yeah. And that's great. And that's great that, you know, you saw this, you know, well-known fictional tale, but that kind of lit the fire. And then just within a short time, you went with it. And I think that's really good that you did that within a short time, because I think a lot of times the more time that gets me from the idea to the actual execution, that's when projects die, right?
Yes, because the longer you take, especially if you do have people that are investing or if you have people that are signed up to do interviews, that, you know, you have to go on their schedule too. So if things get delayed and then you have to push them off, they could say, hey, I'm not available anymore. Or hey, we have other projects going on. So I had the privilege of having my own equipment, my own everything. And also it was during COVID. So I could easily figure out, like, at the time, flights, which, and that may be a little bit later, but some of the flight cancellations, it was crazy. But I figured if I want to get this done, I have to get it done now, because I don't know if in 6 months, given the state of the industry, if it's even going to be available to do. So I just, when I have my heart set on something, I try to just get it done as quickly as possible.
Amazing. I love that you did this during COVID. You know, it's a little time capsule now, because, you know, you mentioned it during the film, and then, you know, people are being interviewed via phone and things like that, which you really don't notice. But once again, getting back to, you didn't let COVID stop you.
Correct.
And that's amazing. I came from the media world before my wife and I launched Buddy, the streaming service, and you know, we just kept pivoting and reaching out to our clients, and we, you know, we kind of switched into more of a broadcasting role. But I found the people who kind of stopped during that whole period, it was really hard for them to come back. And the people who kept going and just said, hey, you know what, it's not going to look exactly the same, but I'm going to get these projects done. I'm going to get these things done. I found that they were a lot more resilient, you know, just putting the whole illness aside, just the life was a lot more resilient. So could you talk about some of the challenges during COVID? I think you hinted at them before, but.
Yeah. So at first I had this, I guess, grandiose idea of heart prints. You're going to go back. You're going to follow a team of mushers from training season to racing season. And then when you start looking at the realities of working through COVID, you realize, okay, well, the DNR, who are in control of all the state parks in Michigan, they're not going to allow us to go there because we're from out of state and everything's shut down. So how do we do this? And I knew a part of the documentary would involve virtual interviews. And I was talking to my producer, Diana. She worked with Moonlighting, a bunch of different shows. And she's like, is that something you'd want to do? And as I thought about it, I'm like, you know, the point of this documentary is telling people stories. It's about the connection and the bond. I'm like, in whatever medium we use, we're still accomplishing that. There isn't anything that we're going to accomplish necessarily just in person versus virtual. Like, so let's go the virtual route because that's easier. It also allowed us to really play with creative ways because we could have like the split screen where you have both people talking, or we can shoot it like we're talking like on a cell phone call or like on a FaceTime call. Let's find a cinematic way to do it. So what was normally a challenge for a lot of people, I tried to run with and embrace and say, okay, if this is what I'm given, let's just make it about this. Let's make it more almost home style, more family friendly. It opened up us being able to meet people from Massachusetts. Bob Tremblay is part of the film. There's people that were going through their own bouts of COVID who are like, well, I'm feeling better, but I can't go out anywhere, but I can do an interview, no problem. I'm like, okay, great. So it allowed us to do more when you normally would think it would make us do less. So it was a challenge as far as the logistics, and we had to change some travel plans around. But in all reality, it didn't really affect our production too much, just the way that we shot it.
Understood. You mentioned a producer, and so I'd like to just briefly talk to you about funding. Where do you come up with funding for a project? Was it self-funded? Did you, you know, get an investor or something like that?
So I have a couple producers that I work with quite frequently. So Diana Mayoko, she is one of my consistent executive producers. A lot of these are passion project type funded, especially with documentary. There's not usually a ton of money within that medium. So it was a lot of self-funded, but she came along. Jan Nijzen, who worked with Warner Brothers, she came along. We didn't need an exorbitant amount of money, again, because it was mainly virtual. And during COVID, everyone was going through their own like financial strains or health strains. So we knew we didn't have a surplus. So primarily self-funded, but I did get some individual donors and then people within the organization mentioned in the film, Mid-Union Sled Haulers. We had some donations from them as well. And with interviews, technically you can't necessarily pay people for interviews because then it seems like you're coercing them. So the budget was relatively low. We didn't need a lot. But I'm still happy with what we ended with. It's been very successful. I'm glad to see it on Buddy. So financing, not too much, but just enough.
Right. And look, I just want to give our audience and our people watching a really full picture of what it, you know, it takes to make these documentaries and movies and all that kind of good stuff. I think, you know, I'm just thinking out loud. Feel free to take this idea. Heartprints in the Snow 2, you do your idea of getting with a team and actually following them for the season. I would watch the heck out of that.
So that's already in the works.
Oh, great. I've
been with a little teaser, right?
Yeah, right. Good.
A couple mushers, some additional people as well. The group, Thunderfeet Kennel, which people will learn about if they watch the film. I don't want to, again, get too much into it. Let them figure out who these guys are. They were also featured on Disney Plus. They were on The Incredible Dr. Pohl. They were on his show. I was interested in following them around, having more one-on-one interviews, like where they live. And you can see like their backyard and where dogs are buried and kind of have more one-on-one time. But then also follow the season of the sport through October through March when they conclude with their spring stuff to kind of show people more hands-on. So that's already in the works, but we're working on ideas right now. But we would love that. I think that would be so much fun. And anytime I get to go back and connect with these people, this is my family of, you know, 11, 15 years. So it would be great to see them in person again.
That would be amazing. So yeah, keep us all informed on that. As a matter of fact, we should give you, we'll do it at the end too, but Robert, let's do it right here in case people are watching. Where can people follow you, follow the movie, all that kind of good stuff? What's the best spot for that?
Yeah. So if you want to follow the movie, we do have our website, gpacent.com. If you're on socials, you can find GPAC Entertainment. Just search that. You'll find it. And also Heartprints Movie through Instagram. You can find us on there as well.
Excellent. Okay, good. you know, you've got some great shots in the movie. Were you out shooting that? Because once again, during COVID, or, you know, were some of these shots licensed, or how did that work out? Because there's some beautiful drone shots in the movie.
Thank you. A few of them, I actually found people that were trying to film their own royalty-free stock footage. But I reached out to them directly and said, hey, if you can shoot this, would you mind? Like, we can offer X amount of dollars for this. So it wasn't necessarily on a website. It was just somebody that was already shooting stuff. And so we got some really pretty drone footage, it was in towards the intro part of the movie. Mm-hmm. Shot in Norway and Finland. And those people, now this movie was, they loved it. So we'll say that. And then I did have some people who actually were mushing that would have a GoPro on. And so they would film with the GoPros on. So that was nice. And then there's some footage where we have a musher who has his own YouTube channel. So we really use some of his stuff as well. So it really was all hands on deck. I said, who is a part of it? Who wants to help shoot some stuff as well, since I can't be there in person? So some stuff was shot for us with the drone footage, but a lot of it was just mushers having a GoPro on, or mushers shooting it themselves for us.
Okay. Explain the term mushers. Is that the person? Is that the dog? Explain the verb mushing. Tell us all about that.
Mushing. I get asked this question a lot. And everyone seems to have a different answer for it. A lot of people watch, you know, Snow Dogs, and they say, oh, well, they say mush, or they say this. So mushing technically is the term for the people driving the dog team. Now, where that name comes from, a lot of people think, oh, it's an Inuit term. It's an Eskimo term. It actually isn't. It was derived from the French word for walk, which is marsh. Mm-hmm. And then when they have people settling, especially Gold Rush, that time period, they would hear people saying marsh, 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 as opposed to mushing. And so it became slowly through, you know, decades and decades and decades of work, it translated into mushing. So mushing is not only the sport name, like a slang term for it, but it's also a musher is who drives the dog team.
Interesting. Okay, now we know. And, you know, you mentioned this, but I think something that leaps out right away in the movie, and especially when you talk with your family, is it's a sport. It's obviously a sport, but it is a bond, right, between these dogs and these people. And I guess I was, you know, you think it's a bond, or you think there's some sort of connection, but in speaking to all the people you spoke to, you can tell that, no, this goes a lot deeper than that.
It does, because it is such a difficult sport to do that I think you can only do it if you love to do it. And you can, there's a line mentioned in the movie, which is not a spoiler for anybody watching, but you can train anything to be afraid of you, but if you really want to be successful, it all comes from love. A lot of people look at mushing and they think, well, how can a dog love just being attached to this line, being forced to run? If you go to these mushing events and you put what they call the gang line, which is the line you hook all the dogs to, dogs are going crazy. They want to pull. You have to hold the sled back. They love it. And they will only listen and love it if they have that bond with you. So you kind of have to get out of your own mindset of like, this is just what I do for fun. And when you have that bond with an animal, it's a magical experience. And I see everybody that I've met that whether they place first place or whether they place last place or whether it's just a recreational run, they don't talk about where they place. They talk about the memories on the trail with their dog. Because, I mean, if anybody that's a dog person or a pet person, you're always trying to find new things to do with your pet and love. And when you have a sport that requires both man and dog involved, there really isn't any other word other than magical. And it was probably the best childhood I could have ever asked for. And I still have that bond with those dogs that have passed. You know, I think our last dog passed away maybe 2011, 2012, but it's as if they're still in my living room with me. Like it doesn't go away.
Right. There's just a lot of magical moments with people talking about the dogs and the dogs who have passed. I appreciate that. And there's one, I don't want to give it away, but there's a woman who's talking about a race where she's, you know, she's mushing and what she wishes she would have done versus what she did. And there's a little bit of regret there and some heartfelt regret and some looking back. And it's very interesting. People should tune in for that. I really like that you hey, people can do this out of fear, right? They can, you know, run a really, really regimented system and the dogs can be kind of, you know, quote unquote, scared into it. But it's going to go way better when you do this out of love. And the people that you talk to are definitely doing it out of love.
So on that point, one story that we didn't touch on in the film that I think speaks to that directly, we had rescued a dog from an owner who was trying to go about dog sledding the wrong way. And they did believe of a more commercialized or sensational view. And if the dog doesn't want to run, there's no point of us having this dog. And they were going to get rid of this dog. And we said, hey, we'll take him in. Don't worry about giving him to a shelter. We got this. That dog became, for my sister, one of her best lead dogs, to the point where this person took notice and said, well, wait a minute, like, this dog wouldn't run for me. And we're like, there's a reason for that. The dogs, they're smart. They know, like, they enjoy the sport because they enjoy doing it with you.
Right.
It's something that, sorry, I can get a little emotional about it. It doesn't work unless the team and the musher work hand in hand. It is a union. Like, when you're on that sled and those dogs are pulling and you're giving commands and they're listening, I mean, what's the incentive, right? They can go straight. You tell them to go G, which is to turn right, or halt, which is to turn left. They don't have to do that. They want to because it's fun and it's a bonding experience. So when we took this dog in and he realized, oh, I'm on a team. I'm in a pack now. Like, this is great. He was amazing, an amazing dog. And he kept running for another 5-6 years. And it's a testament to how, yeah, you can train your dogs to only do mushing and you don't care about anything else. And you're out doing commercial rides or you're kind of abusing how I think the sport should be. And eventually they're just going to give up. They don't care. But when they find a pack they love and a team they love and people that they love, it now becomes what it's meant to be, this partnership. Because if you look even historically, even if they had a job to do in Inuit cultures, it was a union, people and animals working together. Everybody had their role at the table. And now our role isn't so much there's a task to do, it's let's solve this trail problem together. Let's figure out this new path together. I could go on and on. It's you have to have the bond. It's the number one most important thing.
Love it. And everybody's having fun. Everyone's still working hard, but everyone's having fun when that bond is there. I love that.
If you're not having fun, you shouldn't be doing it. You have to love this. And the dogs pick up on that too, and they have a blast. I encourage anybody, if you ever get a chance to go to a dog sled, like recreational meet, and the minute one person brings out a harness and you hear those dogs go crazy, they love it. Is so fun.
Right. Now, when the average lay person like myself thinks of, you know, mushing and dog sledding and all that stuff, we have a dog like an Alaskan Malamute in our mind, right? Mm-hmm. But I saw one of the ladies on your film. She had done some rescues of some dogs and they were not Malamutes. So can, you know, I don't want to say any dog because you don't want to like a Pomeranian in with 10 Malamutes. Right. That's not going to work.
But
right. Can a dog roughly the same size, if it's built to run, be, you know, on these dog sledding teams?
Absolutely. I mean, there's those traditional Nordic breeds, the Spitz breeds of your Samoyed or your Alaskan Husky, your Siberian Husky, even the Sepalus Siberians, which are kind of similar, and your Malamutes, more of the sensationalized Nordic breeds that we see in most movies. But I've seen German Shepherds run. I have seen a Pit Bull. I have seen Golden Retrievers. Because at the end of the day, within our dog world and different dog breeds, the mentality is still the same of mankind and dog, right? So sure, a smaller breed isn't going to be the best choice, but every dog wants to be a part of a pack. Every dog wants to go out and have fun and do something with its owner more than just, oh, let's just go walk for 5 minutes. So any dog can enjoy it. Traditionally, if you want to do more of like your long distance running, which a lot of the Nordic breeds tend to enjoy a little bit more, people tend to stick with those breeds. But yeah, I've seen so many different types of dogs. I've seen a St. Bernard pull on a sled, which actually works. People don't necessarily think of that breed, but I don't think it matters too much. As long as your dogs enjoy it and you enjoy it and you're doing that activity together, they love it. I've seen so many different types of breeds.
Interesting. Okay, so let's get into the actual racing. So, you know, summer months, or you're just starting out, or, you know, you're training in the fall, you don't necessarily need that sled to start, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Multitude of different things you can do. So in fall training season, normally it starts maybe towards the tail end of September, beginning of October, once the weather really starts to shift, because you don't want to be out when it's blazing hot. You want to make sure they're comfortable. We have Canicross, which will just be running with your dog. Maybe people that just want to do maybe two or three dogs, they'll take a dog out at a time and just train, and they'll give the commands. There's also three-wheeled rigs, which it literally looks like just a little triangle, and there's a wheel on each side. And there's like a brake pedal that you can use as well, just with normal wheels. And then there's motorless ATVs people use. Some people see some images of like, why is this four-wheeler behind this team? There's not a motor. It's usually just so that they can pull something with a little bit more weight. That tends to be better, I think, for the Malamutes or the heavier muscled Alaskan dogs. But most people just use a three-wheeled rig. And you'll usually go between, if you're training, really any distance, but on average, I've seen between like 3 to 8 miles is the max you'll go, because it's still a little bit warmer. You don't want to overexert. Sure. But then you treat it just like you would as if you had a sled, you're just on dry land.
Okay. I just thought of something, and that is, and this is training on dry land, training on snow. You as the person in either the sled or the rig or what have you, how fast are you going?
Oh man. It depends. If you have like a team of Alaskan Huskies, we'll say, and they're usually more of your sprinters, your Siberian Huskies. When you're first starting out, usually you could go anywhere from like 15, 20 miles per hour, depending on if you're trying to control the speed. Malamutes, maybe you're going to cap out at about 15, but it also depends on how many dogs you have. So if you have like a three-wheeled rig and you've got six dogs in there, you could probably take off. You could probably get up to almost 25, 30 miles an hour. And then eventually it's going to, you know, wean its way back. If you've got a couple dogs, usually you're going to go a little bit slower. But on average, I'd say about 20 miles per hour throughout the duration of the run. But the minute you start noticing that maybe they're getting a little tired, you know, you ease up the speed, because that's the thing too about them loving to run, is they will overexert themselves very. So okay. You and the usher have to be mindful and say, okay, it is hotter. They don't realize they're going to get, I'm glad they're having fun. I'm glad they're out there running. I'm going to ease up the speed a little bit on the break. And usually the term for that is easy or whoa, or, you know, any terminology you want to use. Normally it's easy. And so they learn to kind of like pace themselves a little bit more. But if they're going at full speed, I mean, on a sled, it's slick, so you can get a lot faster. But in training season, probably 20 miles an hour.
Okay. Now, two, what happens when, you the person, smacks into your face, or take that turn a little wrong and hit a stump, or, you know, what all those things. Can you tell us about some accidents that can happen?
So yeah, I'll actually give you a couple stories of things that have happened. So way that we work with our training season is there's multiple people out at the same time. Usually you get to know each other's dogs. Everybody gets along great. So there have been times where somebody, let's say they get a flat tire, or they hit something and they hit a rock and something causes them to fall off. Usually if your dogs are trained really well, they will stop. They will notice you're not on there and they'll ease up. Usually that's from the leader. The leader notices it and they follow the leader, whatever the leader does. So if the leader starts to ease up, they'll ease up as well. Maybe they go another, like maybe 100 feet or not. There's also times when you have people positioned for safety along the course of the trail that says, oh, there's a dog team coming. There's nobody on there. They will stop the team. They'll make sure the dogs are okay. They'll get some water until the person catches up. In the case of our dogs, it actually happened to my dad. This was in small town Mount Morris, Michigan. And I don't know quite what happened. He said he fell off. I don't know how that worked. The team made it all the way back around, came all the way back to the side of our dog truck and just stopped. So they did the entire trail because they're like, you know what? He fell off in the beginning. He would want us to keep running. And they had a good time. So my dad wasn't even mad. He's like, you didn't wait, but you guys wanted to go have fun. Like, you know, that's great. But we trusted our animals in that way. They knew the trail, they knew what to do, but most of the time they will stop if they notice it, or there's someone there to help catch the team in case they get too far ahead.
Interesting. Okay. you know, in some circles, not this circle, but in some circles, mushing is considered, you know, controversial. Are you abusing these dogs by making them run?
No, absolutely not. That was something I was considering when we were making the film, because I knew by making it, there are always those people that are very quick to jump at something and say, that's wrong, this is bad. And my reaction, because I've met a lot of them in person, is that why don't you just come to the race? Why don't you come to this event and see for yourself? Because it's very easy for some people who don't quite understand the sport or the bond, the number one thing, to just see a picture of somebody running a dog team and think, oh, they're forcing them. But when you see the lead up to that, when you see the minute you get out, there's times I don't even want to go, or my parents didn't want to go, but the dogs want to go, and they'll let you know they're ready to go running. You know, they'll start howling, they'll start going crazy. So we pull out one harness. And at that point, it's sometimes difficult to get them ready because they're so excited. You'll notice everybody has their, whether it's training season and it's a three-wheeled rig or whether it's a dog sled, there's usually a line with a hook on it that's holding the sled in place because they're trying to go. They're excited. You usually have to have a team of maybe 3 to 6 people, depending on how big your team is, to help get you to the start chute, as they call, because they are just ready to go. We do not use whips. There's no any kind of abusive thing used at all. All you're really allowed to have is you have a doggy bag, which is for their safety. So if a dog gets injured, they go in the dog bag. They don't have to run. Some dogs don't even like, maybe they're older, but they want to still be a part of it. So you'll bring that dog along just to kind of sit with you, so they're still part of the pack, even though they're too old to run at that point. Regular vet checkups. We have vets that come through to make sure all the dogs are healthy. The dogs pull you in. The dogs would not pull if they didn't want to do it. You can't force a dog to run. You can use any fear technique out there. You see those movies like, I think Call of the Wild, actually, there's a dog guy that had bought the team and he's using his whips and the dogs are going because they're afraid, but you can't force them to do anything. They will defend themselves and they will defend the pack. So absolutely not. There is no harm done to these animals. The dogs love to do it. And if anybody is ever skeptical or anybody ever questions, I just encourage them to look up your local area, especially if you live in the north, look at your local races or look what's going on and just go visit and just experience it for yourself. Because most people leave with a whole different understanding and more appreciation. And we've actually converted a few people who have been very skeptical. And then the next year, wait a minute, you've got 6 dogs of your own now. So we start to see that. And it really changes you when you see it.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. And I think that's a great approach. Hey, come and check it out. You know, it's very open and no shenanigans going on. And yeah, that's great. Well,
there's times we'll take them in the, if there's no dogs that need to be in a dog bag, we've taken people along for rides just for they can see it for themselves. Because I believe, you know, you're not going to get anywhere if you just want to yell at somebody and then they yell at you and you think it's wrong. It's like, no, how about we approach this with you learning in a fun way and you can see for yourself.
Interesting. And I think that's a lesson we could probably take into a lot of different parts of our lives.
100% agree.
The guy in Massachusetts, Bob his name?
Bob Tremblay, yeah.
Yeah, Bob Tremblay. Okay. He has a really good, I am going to give this part of the movie away because I think it's really interesting. You know, we've been talking about this human dog bond and all the things that are happening right on the dog sledding race. And I think that's so vital to the sport and so vital to why I love the movie so much. And he just has a great quote to this, the effect of, you know, you are actually going through the woods, even though you're on the sled, but you're seeing things through the dog's eyes. You're seeing what they're reacting to. You're seeing what they're noticing. You're seeing, you know, what they're concentrating on, or if something does happen, you could miss it very well, but the dog's going to catch it. And he said that part of it really, you know, is exciting for him and bonds him to his dogs. And I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so it's very true. So everybody's had those stories where even if they just have the dog out for a walk and like he's sniffing here and sniffing there. And there's this rule of thought of like, oh, well, that's how they tire themselves out. It's just they're getting the pheromones from the grass. They pick up on every little scent and every little person that's walked by or there's animal droppings. And they are getting these cues from nature. So it is like doggy social media, right? They get out, they smell, okay, this person this person, oh, maybe this person, this dog's in heat, or, oh, this dog had this for lunch and this happens. And it's just fun to watch those wheels turn. It's something, especially when you're dog sledding and they're running, you'll notice they'll be like always looking around and seeing. So you kind of have to kind of divert their attention back. But that is very much very true. Dogs pick up on a lot more than we would. I mean, we can just be walking through and look at the trees and think it's pretty, but they know every animal that's walked by. They know everything that's dropped there. They know who's been there. That's also how they pick up a lot of danger cues as well, is they'll probably say, oh, there's something in this area that shouldn't be here. I don't want to go too much farther. It's very common, very common. And it's fun to watch those wheels turn. And I've seen that with Malamutes, Siberian Huskies. Right now I have an Australian Shepherd Husky myself. He does the same exact thing. And it's just cute because it's bringing me back, you know, those memories of when I had those dogs when I was younger. And I'm like, okay, so if you want to go over here, we're going to just let you explore. You go check your Facebook and check your Twitter and check your Instagram and TikToks. That's great. And then we'll go back home.
I love that. I love that analogy. And Bob mentioned that too, that, you know, hey, it's their social media. So we're posting pictures of what we ate on Instagram and they're doing the same thing. They're like, oh, that dog ate that because there's those little droppings left behind. And now I know what he had for dinner. Love it.
Sometimes they try to eat that and I'm like, you know what? Let's not go that far. Get sniff. Sniffing's good. But
sniffing's fine. And then let's move on with our day. You know, you talk about the mushers, and this is obviously when it's up and going and it's competition season, it's out in the snow. Right. And you think about the dogs and the tracks they leave behind. And that really translates into the whole name of your movie. And I wonder if you could talk about that.
Yeah. So, the name of our movie was obviously Harpins in the Snow. And when I was first developing this, I kept thinking about wintertime. And going out and seeing the dogs, we had like 10 acres of land, and you'd always see their tracks in the snow. And it's not that they necessarily looked like hearts, but with every little footprint, I felt warm. Like I felt close with them because it's like, oh, there's my dog was here today. Like I could kind of trace their steps. So my heart is always with them. So their paw prints are like my heart as well. So I'm like, every paw print I see was a part of me too. And that was my life. They were our everything. So I try to give an analogy of when you see your dog's paw prints, even if it's not in the snow, like you don't know how long you get with your animals, right? That's the curse of having a pet. You only get 10 to 15 years, maybe. So every time I see a paw print, it's a reminder of how much I love my animals. So instead of calling it paw prints in the snow, it's heart prints because it's leaving a print on me and it leaves a print in the ground as well.
Love that. Absolutely love it. And that's great. And it's wonderful that you named the movie that. Okay. So somebody is watching the movie on Buddy and they love it and they're getting all excited. Now we've obviously talked about if they live in Michigan or Massachusetts or Wisconsin or Alaska, you know, your go-to advice is go see a race, go check it out as a spectator and just go see what it's all about. You know, you can obviously Google or put into ChatGPT when races are happening and other stuff, right? But let's say you just want to know more about the sport. Where are some good places people can go to learn more about dog sledding?
So I love our initial group, Mid-Union Sled Haulers out of Michigan. If they were just to search Mid-Union Sled Haulers, they have a lot of information on there. They have good tips for racing as well. And they'll have links to where you can find like historical facts. Also, Kalkaska. I know it's probably hard to guess how to spell that just saying it in an interview. But Kalkaska out of Michigan also has some great resources. Or if you really want to learn, if you just do a simple Google search and just search whatever your state is and search dog sledding, there's always some kind of group. As long as you live in the northernmost part of the country. Let's say you live in like Texas, or if you live in Florida or more southern states, I would highly recommend checking out Mid-Union Sled Haulers. They can give you everything you need to know.
Excellent. Good. That's great. And people can obviously pick up little things on social media, I'm guessing YouTube, things like that. But I love to actually check out an organization and start going. And from what I can see, just being an outsider, people seem very friendly. And they would, you know, if you would just walk up to somebody, Robert, and say, hey, I just want to know more about this. Can you introduce me? You know, as long as they're not getting ready to go on the race, right? They're they're standing around and that kind of stuff. I think if you would strike up a conversation, people would be more than willing to talk about you or with you. Is that right?
Absolutely. If somebody wanted to reach out to me directly, if they had questions, I would be more than happy. I can also hook them up with resources. I could probably even give them information about a local race or local event in their area. More than happy to do that as well. I do know some people like to do their own research. Maybe they want to just do it like with articles. So that's why I would recommend with Union Sled Haulers. But there's a plethora of people like myself out there that really want to show this sport in a positive way and really want to get that message out. And unfortunately, on social media, sometimes you might not know who you're talking with, and maybe they're trying to sway you another direction. So that's why I would say if you find a great organization, definitely go with them. You can reach out to me directly as well. I think I gave you guys the social media stuff already early on. Even if they go through the Heart Prince Movie Instagram or the GPAC Entertainment, that goes directly to me. So I'm more than happy to answer any questions people have.
Excellent. And I can back you up because you and I, we communicate through Instagram, and man, you're on it, which I love.
Yeah.
Now I see some awards behind you. I know there's a Telly Awards, but let's talk about this movie was nominated for a regional Emmy, and that's a big deal. And I am really proud of that for you. Tell me about that process and how that happened.
Yeah, so because he filmed this out of Michigan, they have the regional Emmy chapters all around. And initially, we're going to just submit this for like a news and documentary Emmy. But the awards committee said, hey, because this is focused more on Michigan and that culture, we're actually going to push this to the regional. So they kind of made that decision for us. And we submitted, and then it was between us and one other documentary that went up. And obviously, they ended up winning. They were a great film, but to be nominated and be within the top two of 2021 for Michigan was huge. And based on the feedback I got from them, it's because of the subject matter and because of what we're trying to accomplish. And it was an honor for me that not just my small town mushing community or the people I interviewed, but really high up people see the value in this type of story. And it was my hope that by getting this nomination, I'm going to start seeing a lot more of these projects out and about and going on, because there's so many stories to be told, so many stories. And just getting that nomination, it's not about being nominated, but the fact that we were tells me that there's a lot of heart and life behind this film.
Yeah, it's validation. It's validation from other people that we like it too. And that's always great. I think that's wonderful. Okay, so you can see Heart Prince in the Snow on Buddy. Go to watchbuddy.com. Get your free trial. Check it out. I say jump right in and watch Heart Prince in the Snow as one of the first things you do, because I love it. I think it's a great, great movie. And it's kind of indicative to the things that we have on Buddy. Robert, once again, let's get the socials where people can find you or how they can contact you.
Absolutely. So if you want to check out the Heart Prince social itself, it's just Heart Prince Movie on Instagram. You can search GPAC Entertainment to get in touch with me and all of our current projects as well. And if you want to send me a direct message as well, I do have my personal. It's _ Robert Michael _. And then you can check out GPACEntertainment.com for all of our projects as well.
Excellent. Well, Robert, it's been great to talk with you. Thank you very much for having this interview with me today.
Thank you so much. This was a pleasure.
Thanks. And remember, folks, adopt, don't shop.